Welcome to Larimer County Republican Radio. We are your source for what you need to know here in Northern Colorado. Every week, we will be discussing local news, legislation, elections, interviewing both candidates and elected officials, and keeping you up to date on important upcoming events. Larimer County Republican Radio is Jerry Patterson, the internal vice chair of the executive board, and myself, Jason Van Tatenhove, bonus member to the executive board of the Larimer County Republican Party. Join us each week for a new podcast. Hello, Larimer County, and welcome to Larimer County Republican Radio. This is our second episode. I'm Jason Van Tatenhove.
And I'm Jerry Patterson.
And we are going to be talking about education today. We are of the new school year coming up, and all the parents are getting ready for that. We've got school board elections coming up, and
a couple of topics came up in state legislature, and actually we're going to have a ballot initiative again too, right? This term, this election cycle, working on the 2013 school funding, and so we want to talk a little bit about what's going on there.
So today's going to be all about back to school. So let's start off with some local news. Wasn't a very good week for people in Fort Collins. We had a couple different things happen. Center Partners, which is one of the big employers here in the city, is going to be getting rid of 600 jobs.
Oh, 600. My goodness, that's a lot.
Yeah, it really is going to have a bad impact on our local economy here. I can tell you that my own personal small business. I have a whole lot of people that work at Center Partners that are my customers, and it will certainly have an effect on my bottom line. Yeah, they're going to be out of work by October 18th. It looks as if they're going to be the entire Ziegler Road office is going to be shut down by the 18th of October. And they're looking like they're going to be possibly laying off even more with their other location as well. Apparently, they lost a major client, Capital One, and decided to move their customer support functions all in-house. So that's not good news. And then as a double whammy, the Fort Collins Housing Authority is going to be displacing 88 Fort Collins families. Apparently, there are these older houses that they call white elephants. They're aging single-family homes with a high maintenance cost.
It's pretty extremely high. What was the number on that?
You know, they say that the Fort Collins Housing Authority estimates they need $1 million each to maintain the single family and small multifamily units.
Oh, that's pretty steep.
Yeah, you know, and they're only getting so much from the feds, apparently. They say that the agency has received from the federal government over the past 13 years. You know, looking back at the year 2000, they received $500,000, you know, 2001, $650,000. You know, jump up to, 2011 and 720,000, 2012, 690,000. So, you know, it's just, apparently there's a lack of funds there and, you know, the working class is going to get hit by it. And you got to wonder how many of these, families that are being displaced might be employed by Center Partners and getting a double whammy.
Yeah, definitely. There's a real concern there. And, you know, I think this goes back to, you know, one of the things that I think a lot of Republicans are always concerned about is, you know, when we put the government in charge of programs like this, instead of looking at things like, you know, Habitat for Humanity. Habitat for Humanity builds a house and then it's yours. You know, no one's selling it out from underneath you. It's your house, you know, and I think I see a lot of times that's kind of the difference between, you know, Republicans and others on issues like this is, you know, government control, the government's going to take care of all this versus, hey, let's perform a charitable service for someone that really needs the help.
Yeah, that really gets down to the core belief chain, you know, differences between the two parties there. Give them the ability to make their own home, you know, give them the ability to make their own jobs. You know, I pulled myself out of poverty through creating my own small business. I firmly believe that myself. We did have some good news, you know, here in our neighborhood, me and Jerry are neighbors, actually, and we had some craziness going on in our neck of the woods.
Little mountain lion came by to visit.
Yeah, literally, a couple weeks ago. Literally blocks away. The people in the fire department, you know, the police fighting the good fight kept us safe once again. They took care of the mountain lion. Apparently, it was right on Timberline and Drake. And literally blocks from my house.
Yeah, there's a tremendous response around that, and I just wanted to take an opportunity to really thank our local law enforcement and the Colorado Division of Wildlife and everyone that was involved with firefighters. Let's see, it was Poudre Fire Authority, I think, that just really stepped up and responded super quick and took care of the problem. And
it definitely makes me feel a lot safer. My children play out in the front yard all the time, and like I said, we live not far away, so definitely a little concerning.
Yeah, our local government authorities don't get enough kudos, so
yeah, thank you very much. Yes. Guys, we appreciate thank you. All right, well, let's go ahead and move on to our main story here. Let's start off with some of this Common Core curriculum that's being pushed. Can you explain? I really don't, as a parent, you know, I got my kids in the school system. And I can tell you, I really don't understand, this curriculum and where it's coming from and kind of who's putting it forward. Can you explain this a little bit, Jerry?
Yeah, well, you and a lot of other people, actually, the Common Core curriculum is something that's kind of been kind of almost like a surprise attack in some ways. And a lot of people probably haven't heard much about it because, while it's actually, frankly, pretty new and it's kind of been done under wraps, there hasn't been a lot of public information about Common Core. There, you know, there's some good and bad to it. I mean, I know some people are probably going to be upset when they hear that I say there's some good to it. There's some good ideas, you know. I mean, the notion of accountability in schools and standardized testing. I know a lot of people maybe not like standardized testing, but there's some benefit to it to try to understand, you know, what our schools are producing for our tax dollars. And so, you know, there's some claims that Common Core is along the same line. And, you know, it comes with national standards testing. It comes with all sorts of things. So, you know, those aren't really terribly objectionable. The thing that I think a lot of people are worried about with it is it's a national effort. So it's an effort by the federal government. We have a tradition in this country of having state and local control over our schools, and it's a pretty sacred tradition, really. And why is that important? Why shouldn't we have national standards? You know, Why shouldn't we, you know, we see that America is what, like 20th or something in the world and in STEM, and which is science, technology, engineering, and mathematics.
There's no doubt we need to do a little bit better with public education. And, you know, reading through some of this stuff, some of the concerns that people have about it, it seems to be people are mostly concerned with losing their losing control over this.
Yeah, losing their autonomy. And what's been going on in local schools. Well, and I'll tell you, one of the concerns, and it's a valid concern, is, you know, like Colorado's even already adopted some of these, and you may not know this, because this is probably a surprise to you. Colorado has already adopted some of the Common Core curriculum standards in reading. And, you know, so I pulled up a fourth grade, just out of curiosity, I pulled up a fourth grade curriculum. Knowledge of complex orthographic patterns and morphological roots contributes to improved vocabulary and comprehension outcomes. That's true. My kids learned that in their school today, and it's a great tool. Okay, that's fantastic. Effective reading comprehension relies on using various reading subskills. Also true, and it goes through a whole list of things. Also true, correct sentence formation is something they're interested in. Yay, okay, this is all good. I like it. Character traits that provide clues to define identity can reflect or differ from the identity of characters in other texts. Yeah, so they're trying to touch a little bit on, you know, comparative analysis of text, deconstructing text a little bit based on, you know, different things that they've read. Now it starts to get a little weird. So, you know, some of the leading questions around this that they propose are, you know, things like, what traits do you share with the main character? What differences are there in your life and that of the character? Now, so this, you know, this is not necessarily a bad thing, but again, it starts to delve into, you know, kind of maybe placing judgment or what, you know, trying to place what a character's beliefs or value system is, and maybe even placing judgment on that belief or value system. What character traits, and here it kind of focuses back on the individual. Now, granted, these are fourth graders, I get it. But, you know, they're not all about themselves. I mean, they can think outside of themselves. And so this is some of the concern I think I have. But here's what it says. What character traits do you possess that you could include in a personal narrative? What language or vocabulary would I use to describe myself? Now, so it's really starting to focus back away from reading at all.
Right.
You know, you start looking at some of these questions. So you start digging into some of this and you're like, wait a minute, what's going on here? Interpersonal interactions can build positive relationships when individuals listen to and support others' ideas. Jason, will you give me a hug? I feel so warm and fuzzy about that.
Yeah. I feel like I got to snuggle a little bit.
Yeah. What does that have to do with reading, writing, and communication?
It's getting very touchy-feely.
Yeah, and that's the concern, is you see this kind of laced, from what I hear, and I need to read up more on this myself, is you see this kind of laced throughout. I didn't have to look very hard to find this, where they kind of end up landing in these places that are just like, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 degrees really removed away from what I believe education should be about, what I've seen my kids thrive and succeed in public schools has very little to do with a lot of these questions. They teach them how to take the text apart, think critically about the text.
Yeah, and that critical thinking I think is key and very important. But yeah, some of the ways these are going, I'm not sure if that's the right direction.
Right, and so, you know, so I get that there's a lot of concern around this, and I think the things to really be concerned about, maybe I'm wrong here, because you're not giving up local autonomy just because you're adopting a curriculum. But most public schools don't write their own curriculum. They adopt it from somewhere else. You're not losing your autonomy because of that. But really what you're doing is you're adopting a strategy that's coming from a source, and you're just... In a lot of cases, what we're doing here is this isn't a well thought. Well, maybe it's well thought out. I won't say it's not well thought out, but it's not well tested. This curriculum is not something that's been tried before, and it's being pushed across the country as the solution to the problem. Going back to, you know, some of the things we talked about earlier, STEM, and you know how our test scores are actually pretty low in a lot of areas. And, you know, our schools, in some cases, in some places, are not doing a very good job of educating our students.
Very true. Now, whose job is it then to come up with this curriculum? I mean, at a legal level, you know, whose job is it to really decide what this is, and how does that work into, you know, state government here?
Yeah, and this is the concern, is a lot of the state boards of education have just kind of wholesale adopted a lot of these things that have come out of the Common Core push. And you know, that's really where it should set, at a high level, is, you know, maybe standards like, proficiency in, you'll see that a lot of times in the State Board of Education standards, proficiency in blah. And what, you know, what does proficiency mean? You get a decent grade, right? It's basically what that means. Or they might define some kind of testing standards, that sort of thing. But really it's up to the local school boards to implement, the actual curricula.
Right. And it seems like we have the state legislature, you know, stepping in and kind of getting in the way of that a little bit.
Well, maybe a little bit. Yeah. Moving on to sex education for a minute. You know, one of the things that, the state legislature did was, they passed, I think we talked a little bit about this last week. They passed comprehensive, sex education, for, fourth grade through 12.
And it was going to be even younger back, you know, originally, right? It was going to start at kindergarten, I believe.
Well, yeah, the original, the original proposal, yeah. And so one of the interesting things about this is, you know, the bill is intended to include experiences. This is where I think I feel like they've gone off the rails. And they've probably, then now, again, we just talked about who's in charge of curriculum. Here is the bill, the text of the bill that got passed and put into law that's now a part of our our state education program in Colorado, including experiences that have traditionally been left out of sexual health education. Communities, including communities of color, immigrant communities, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender communities, people with physical or intellectual disabilities, and people who have experienced sexual victimization. Now, that seems like it's prescribing to me. To me, I feel like that's really prescribing a particular set of guidelines. In other words, a curriculum.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And it just I'd say it goes even farther. It seems like it's dictating morals almost, you know, to a certain extent.
To a certain extent, I think so. I mean, you know, what's funny, Jason, is right before that section of the bill, it talks about how, you know, any program needs that a school adopts needs to have its roots and be well tested with scientific methods. Right. What does that have to do with? I mean, I get that there's sociological aspects to some of it, but what does that have to do with that text, you know, of, you know, talking
communities
about
of color, transgender, you know? Yeah, I don't get it. And again, I think we're both, you know, hitting our heads on the wall trying to figure this one out, because it just it's bad news
a little bit. Here's what the state constitution says about how education is supposed to be dictated in the state. So a couple of things is the General Assembly shall provide by law for organization of school boards of convenient size, in each of which shall be established a board of education to consist of three or more directors to be elected by the qualified electors of the district. Sure. Said directors shall have control of instruction in the public schools of their respective districts. Why is the state legislature passing this stuff?
Yeah, I don't know.
That seems to be a little counterproductive, contradictory to the Constitution.
Indeed, it really, really is. You know, and we even have some really bad tax increases that are coming up with these other education issues that we need to know about.
You know, and yeah, Jason, when you say really bad, we're looking at a tax increase that will bring in another $1 billion into the general. Don't make any mistake about it. General fund. The way the initiative is set up is it actually it reintroduces a progressive tax system into our income tax system. So in Colorado, we've had the benefits many years of a flat tax system, and this actually removes that system.
Yeah, and we're going to wind up paying a lot because of it. I know as a small business owner, we talked about some numbers last night that, you know, I'm going to wind up paying, I believe, $500 more a year.
That's more like six, actually.
Yeah. Closer to six. you know, just based on, you know, my small business, the way it's set up. And, you know, with the economy being the way it is and the hits we're taking already, you know, it's just going to make it much more difficult for small business owners and just everybody. I mean, do you have extra money you need to throw at this as it is? I mean,
well, you know, that's just it. Is I mean, even you know, we just talked about earlier about people in public housing here in Fort Collins and how they're getting shuffled around. We talked about some of the lower wage earning income jobs going away from Fort Collins. Here's someone that gets $45,000 a year, which isn't a whole lot. I couldn't survive on that in Fort Collins, not in this, certainly not in Larimer County. For someone earning $45,000, it's a tax increase of $166 per year. Now that may not sound like a lot, but that's that's for a lot of people, that's a month's worth of, or maybe not a month, but it's 2 weeks worth of groceries. Yeah. For an individual, it could be a month's worth of groceries if you're being real tight.
That's a utility bill. That's a heating bill. That's, you know, a medication that could be gotten, you know, and we're going to have to come up with it. And, you know, we've already seen that things are getting harder and harder for, you know, the people who make less here in the county, and this is not going to help. And you know what gets me is that just because we're throwing all this money at education, there's nothing to show that things are going to get better. You know, you look at how public schools have been faring, it especially compared to like charter schools, which are able to do things on much less money. You know, yeah, that's right. Get much better results.
You know, some of the best schools here in the county are charter schools, and they only get, by and large, they get some extra money here and there, but really their primary source of funding, Jason, is the state per pupil allotment. That's it. That's what they get, which is a fraction of what the districts in this state are paying for their regular schools. And we're seeing time and time again, most of these charter schools produce a better education for their students.
Absolutely. Liberty's got the best test scores in the state, as far as I know. You know, they're doing incredible things. We're actually trying to get our children, they're on the list to get into Liberty. So, mm-hmm. You know, I think it's definitely, we need to kind of reevaluate what we're throwing so much money at, and is it really going to work? You know, is this the best plan that we can go forward with the taxpayers' money? And I think that the answer to that is a resounding no, that there are better options we can look at and explore than just throwing a lot more money that we can't really afford to be paying at this problem.
That's right. And one of the things the initiative does is kind of weird. All the money goes into the regular state coffers, but then the money that comes out of taxation, not just income tax, but we're talking sales tax and we're talking excise tax, which is money that gets raised from oil and gas extraction, stuff like that, the road taxes, the tax from selling gasoline, that's going to be basically earmarked now. 43% of the entire take from the taxation in the state is going to be earmarked for education.
That's everything.
43%
of everything.
Of everything.
Yeah, that's insane.
It's crazy. I do not understand why people think this is a good idea. Yeah, I want to see well-funded schools. I want to see our schools thrive and survive.
I do too. I've got children in the school system. I want to see them do well. I want to see, you know, the children are the future of what we've got going on, and we've got to stack our deck as best we can. But again, that doesn't necessarily mean that, you know, we're going about things in the right way. I think we need to reevaluate and really look hard as to what has been successful and what has not been.
Yeah, and it seems like a lot of times Democrats just seem to want to throw money at the issue.
Yeah.
When realistically it's not a, to me, from what I see in most cases, yeah, some schools are underfunded in this state. I get that. We've had a whole series of court cases around that, for better or for worse. And I know that there are some school districts in this state that are struggling. But just across the board, trying to peanut butter a solution like this isn't going to work. You know, yeah, Republicans are very concerned about education. We want to see school choice because we've seen the benefits, the great benefits of that here in this county.
And it works.
It's some of the best schools. Like I said, some of the best schools we have are right here in Larimer County. And why? Because they're charter schools, because they're innovating education here in the state.
Yeah. Again, it works. And we need to look at that. All right, well, let's move on to some good news. You know, we've been harping this stuff, and, you know, not necessarily the best of news, but we do have some good things going on. You know, we've talked about Sheriff Smith and some of the things he's been doing as of late. I don't know if our listeners have been following Justin Smith on his Facebook post, but he's got a Facebook page, and I'd say a couple times a day, he puts up some really great posts.
Yeah, you got to follow his. You definitely got to like his page and follow his. What's that called? A wall? What's
his newsfeed? You know,
his newsfeed. Thank you.
It's just look it's up Justin Smith. You don't have to put sheriff or anything in there, but you'll see he's got a little picture of him in his sheriff's outfit. But we wanted to kind of talk about this last post he had put up yesterday because he's got some really great things to say. I'm just going to read it to us. He's talking about. Here we go. As we watch the political progressives and their allies in the media bask in the news of the Republican stalwarts being challenged from within the party, I am reminded of the last time we saw such a revolution from within the party. It was 1980 when Washington outsider Ronald Reagan bucked the establishment and was swept to victory against the wishes of the then GOP establishment.
That's right.
Reagan represented the millions who were tired of their values and principles being ignored. Sound familiar? Ultimately, by focusing on the vision of personal empowerment, Reagan broadened the coalition to include millions who traditionally considered themselves Democrats or independents. Could it be that 2013 is the beginning of another such wave within the GOP? Could it be that over the next few election cycles, we'll see the rebirth of the GOP, a rebirth based on the values of individual liberty and freedom, one that shares the vision of America as that bright, shining city on a hill? Hmm. None of this establishment predicted in 1980, and it should be no surprise that they can't see it today either. You know, and I think he's got a lot of good things there. You know, I really feel like we right now, the team we've got going on here in the county and just in the state, there's just a feeling of revolution going on. And it may not be seen from the outside, but I have to agree with
that.
It's
definitely not seen from the outside. We're seeing the Gang of Eight, and we're seeing lots of stuff that people aren't liking with what's going on with the Republican Party in Washington.
And people don't understand that, you know, the Gang of Eight, that ship has sailed. You know, they've been elected. There's not too much we can do with that, but we can move forward. And you got to just separate the party from these guys that are going off on their own with their own agendas. You know, we've got to really look at how we can re-entrench and get re-involved and understand that that's not the party. The party is moving forward and doing great things. The party is here in the county. The party is here in the state. We are in the local trenches fighting the good fight. And we've got, you know, we've got so many disenfranchised Republicans because of what's going on here nationally.
Yeah. And, you know, Jason, I've seen a lot of people that have just kind of and got my, I get emails. It turns out I get the I'm one of the people that gets the info at larimergop.org. And I'll tell you, more times, more often than not, when we get emails from people who are tired of the party, what it is that they're focused on the national party and what's going on nationally. Let me tell you, you know, if you're tired of what you're seeing, get involved. Don't check out. That's the worst thing you can do, because that empowers the people you don't like to do more. If you want to change, you've got to get involved. It's a participatory process.
Yeah. If we drop out now, then they're going to continue along unhindered. You know, there will be no resistance to them putting forward their agenda and getting it passed. And we've got to re-entrench and really reform our lines and get back in the fight. The fight isn't over until that last bell rings.
And the fight's not over. The fight's not over.
It's far from over.
I think we've got a lot of, we're starting to build a lot of momentum here in the county just through our small efforts so far. But they're going to get bigger and bigger. And we need your help. We need your help financially. We need your help physically, whether that be just walk at a parade, you know, or wave signs.
One way you can get involved is, you know, I wanted to talk about this gypsy voter thing with the recall and, you know, talking about, you know, kind of what's been happening with the Second Amendment. You know, so there's this issue going on where we're seeing, due to the new education bill that had been passed, or not education, I'm sorry, the new election voter initiative, HB 1303. It seems that there might be some shenanigans that could be pulled here coming up real quick in the recall election. So,
What's going on with that, Jason? What kind of shenanigans are we talking about here?
Okay, so let's say you live in Denver and you really want to vote in the September 10th recall election of Senate President John Morse in the Springs, District 10. District 11. And but you don't live there. Well, that's no longer a problem due to the new legislation. You can go down to Colorado Springs to the polling center, and
directly to the polling center.
Yeah, you can show up at a voting service and or the polling center in Colorado Springs on or before the election day and tell the staffers that you intend to move to Morse's Senate District 11. And as long as you've lived somewhere in Colorado for the past 22 days, and then if you don't actually live in the district, there's no reason you can't vote.
What?
Yeah. Wait. And get this. So if you, and even if you don't move there, you know, say you just were making that story up by chance and didn't actually really want
to
move
really
there.
Maybe you really did intend to move there and it just didn't work out. Happen.
There's no law you've broken. There was no fraud that happened. So, you know,
I need to move to the Springs here. I'm not sure.
Well, I can tell you the other side is certainly thinking the same thing. I think they're going to be bussing in droves of people to possibly look into moving into that district on election day. And, you know, I think we need to really look at that and figure out what could be happening there. And
now how do we defend against that? I mean, that seems like a pretty wrong thing to go and swear that you're considering moving to a district. Well, I don't know. Maybe I am. Colorado Springs might be a nice change this time of year. I don't know.
Yeah.
But I don't know. It just that seems pretty crazy to me. Who is served by that?
Yeah. It's a new law, so we're still trying to figure it out. And, you know, maybe we've got this wrong. So we're going to be actually talking with the new county clerk here in Larimer County, Angela Myers. We'll be talking with her here very shortly. And hopefully she'll be able to clear up some of these questions that we have as far as, can this actually happen? Can we really just go there and say we're going to move in and be able to vote on this recall election and not be a part of that district?
Right.
Because that opens the possibility for the Dems to bust people in or, you know, anyone.
How is that representation? I mean, how are you... How does anyone get to pick their own representation? That's garbage.
Yeah, it really does not serve the people. So that's something we need to keep in mind. And, they're calling it the gypsy voter issue there. So we'll see who's going to be a gypsy and who's not. So another way we can get involved is, again, we have our Family Fun Day, Second Amendment Fun Day coming up in Estes Park.
The Estes Park Gun Club on August 17th from 8 a.m. to 3 p.m.
Yeah, so if you're interested in doing that, come on down, shoot some guns with your family. Kids are more than welcome. Again, you can get your concealed carry permit, and there'll be several different competitions. If you're interested in that, tickets are now available online at thelarimergop.org. So check that out.
Yeah, go to our website, check that out. Definitely get your tickets early so we know you're planning to come, and we'd love to see you there.
Yeah, it's going to be a great day, and we'll all be awesome. There.
One other thing that we have going on coming up here pretty quick is the one of my favorite things is the Loveland corn roast event, and it's a good time. They're going to have a parade, and we want to be a part of that parade. We were already signed up, and we'd love to have your support in walking in that. Bring a bag of candy and walk with us. You'd be surprised how many people are cheering us on, giving us the thumbs up, giving us smiles.
Yeah, it really is great. I was in the last parade on the 4th of July, and it was a great experience, you know, just having the people. So many people come up and just say thank you. Thank you for your service. Thank you for what you're doing. And that just, it drives it home, you know, for those of us that are involved in volunteering and putting our time every weekend. You know, it's a great feeling. So, you know, come be a part of that. See what that's like. And, you know, come out and help us out with that.
Yeah, go on our website, send an email out to us, or click on the volunteer tab. Those are all ways you can show that you want to help out with the Corn Roast Parade or anything else. Yep.
All right. Hello, Larimer County. This is Jason Van Taten back, and I am in the office here with County Clerk and Recorder Angela Myers, our new county clerk. And we figured the best person in the county to answer the questions we have about this gypsy voter registration rumors is to go directly to the horse's mouth and ask. So, Angela, what's in your opinion? What do you think's going on with this? And do we need to be worried?
You know, Jason, I'm so glad you came here to talk about this. Number one, and I have heard about it a couple times previous to your calling me, and. Essentially, folks are out there saying that that folks can decide to go down to Colorado Springs and indicate that they intend to move there and vote without it being illegal. And I'm here to clarify that that would be an illegal act.
Yes, absolutely. And we're actually looking at the legislation right now, mm-hmm. Which is HB 1303, and it does absolutely definitively say. That it is illegal, and I think the confusion came from the term intend. That there was some misquoting going on from another clerk in another part of the state, and that's really where the confusion started. But if you go back to the legislation itself, it's very clear, and we're going to go through that right now.
Okay, so in 1303, section 7, 1-2-102. Says that in F, it says that if a person moves from one county or precinct in the state to another with the intention of making the new county or precinct a permanent residence, the person is considered to have residence in the county or precinct to which the person moved, with a ED at the end. I think it makes it real clear. When the person goes down there, they're going to have to fill out a registration form indicating their residence. That has to be a current residence where they actually live at the time. And they're going to have to sign that registration form at the bottom. There is a an affidavit they sign under penalty of perjury that says that everything in that document is true and correct to the best of their knowledge, including the address that they give as their residence.
Right. And so it has nothing to do with intent. It has everything to do with whether or not you are moved, you already moved in there at that address. So, so if people were to go do this, like a lot of people are supposing they may, it would in fact be a felony, right?
Well, I would say yes, according to election law, if you under penalty of perjury say that you're doing something that you're not doing or live in a place you're not living, I would say yeah. People could certainly go down there, live, and come back and change their residency back to here, but they have to give an address in wherever they say they're moving to.
Right. And you know, I think it's just a question of morality too. I mean, it goes against the intent of the law to say that you're going to intend to move someplace and not actually do it. That, you know, it seems a little shady from what people were talking about. So I'm glad that we have that cleared up, that, you know, if it were to happen, there would be repercussions and it'd be something we could follow up on and you know, have some recourse for.
Yeah, if we were having a recall election here in Larimer, I would try to keep track of how many people actually are changing their registration address near the end of the time period. And that, to me, would raise a red flag with the legislature, be something I could provide them. I think that as a clerk and recorder, there wouldn't be anything I could do at the time. I would have to allow them to vote, assuming that they are being honest. But I would think that data would be interesting to the legislature because it would be rather rare to have a lot of that happening all at once.
Right. So we do feel that it could be a little bit of a loophole that could happen. And we wanted to just discuss that real quick. And so, Angela?
Yeah, I didn't want this to be skipped over entirely. Someone would really have to make an effort. So what they would have to do is make an effort to go down to Colorado Springs or wherever they're from and go to Colorado Springs and say that they have moved. When they do that, they're going to fill out a new registration form with their new address where they have moved already to. And when they sign that form under penalty of perjury, they say that they have moved. Then they could go back to their home where they came from to go down there and do a new registration and say that they have moved back to wherever they were from again.
So theoretically, they could say move to a friend's house, you know, where they're staying on the couch or whatnot.
Theoretically, and yes.
So that's where this could happen, where people could, you know, they're going to have an address that they can use down there.
Mm-hmm. And it has to be a legitimate address. Yeah, otherwise, it'll pop up in our system saying this is not a real address.
So they wouldn't be able to use like hotel, motel type address.
Right.
But as far as, you know, having a physical address to a house, that's something they might be able to use to commit this fraud.
Each and every person would have to have a, you know, do that individually.
Right.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's nothing to say they wouldn't say that they've got 30 people living in a house. There would be some possible coding violations there. But this is where this could be on. So the way we would, we'd have to think about this and see about how we might be able to react to it. But that's basically where things are standing. So there is a possibility it could happen. There's going to be some hoops you're going to have to jump through in order to get this to happen. So there's a possibility for shenanigans, but it is smaller than we thought.
It's certainly not based on intent
right.
to move. It's you have to have already moved. It's the clarity there.
Okay. All right. Well, thanks again.
You bet.
Thank you for once again joining us here at Larimer County Republican Radio. Join us again next week for another episode. Be good, Larimer County.